Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
The first form is self-doubt, manifesting as belief in dysfunctional thoughts. Some part of us believes these thoughts are reality, are true. This self-doubt often originates from what Charlotte Joko Beck called our core belief, a complex of thoughts and emotions arising from difficulties or misunderstandings encountered in our early childhood experiences. Some psychologists use the term the basic fault. These patterns of thought and emotions result in an insecurity in ourselves, a self-doubt that manifests below the surface of our conscious personalities. As a result, we tend to identify with an image of ourselves based on errors of perception, judgment, or fear, which result in building defenses that often are not quite conscious. This faulty self-image can also lead to a sense of isolation or a posture of incompleteness, worry, sometimes self-destructive behaviors. I've seen this manifest in myself as a sense of lack or unworthiness at times. You may have heard this referred to as imposter syndrome. Thoughts of inadequacy bubble up, creating a sense of anxiety. And as a result, our energy gets channeled into negative loops. We can become paralyzed by indecision or procrastination, even when we have an ongoing sense of this process at work in our minds. This form of doubt is described by the Indian and Tibetan schools of Buddhism as a klesha, or hindrance, a disturbing psychological factor that clouds the clarity of mind and prevents progress along the path. The second form of doubt that Donan spoke of was great doubt, one of the three pillars of Zen, the other two being great faith and great determination. Great doubt is inquisitive in nature, where we are willing to suspend judgment in any situation to wait, to listen, and to witness, where we can question without expecting any sort of answer, and we can be open to any outcome without assigning a value. It is to be willing to stand in the mystery of what it is to be alive. 17th century Japanese Zen master Takasui said, "You must doubt again and again, asking yourself what the subject of hearing could be. Pay no attention to the various illusory thoughts and ideas that may occur to you. Only doubt more and more deeply, gathering together in yourself all the strength that is in you, without aiming at anything or expecting anything in advance, without intending to be enlightened, and without even intending not to be enlightened. Become like a child within your own breast." Stephen Batchelor, in his book, The Faith to Doubt, describes it as a state of existential perplexity, the place within us where awakening is the closest. He says that in Zen, doubt is transformed into the path. The energetic power of what we may see as an obstacle is used as a vehicle for freedom and illumination. He declares that faith is not simply belief. Faith is the condition of ultimate confidence that we have the capacity to follow the path of doubt to its end. I'll be drawing heavily from Stephen Batchelor's book for this talk today, because he is so effective at finding words to describe what is essentially a mystery beyond language. Batchelor tells us the story of his training as a monk in the Tibetan Gelugpa tradition. At one point in his 8 years of study there, he had an experience that he describes as mystical, which he relates as an overwhelming sense of the sheer mystery of life. And he found that he had trouble putting this into context. He could find no way to talk of doubt as the radical basis of spiritual life in the Tibetan monastic environment in which he was training. He subsequently learned that there were certain Buddhist scriptures that had never been translated from Chinese into the Tibetan language, and in particular, one that is a key teaching in the Wayan and Zen traditions, the Satipatthana Sutra, the teaching on the four foundations of mindfulness. Let's mention these four foundations for a moment. Mindfulness of body, mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of feelings. That's an interesting one. You could say that one actually amounts to mindfulness of our judgments, positive, negative, or neutral. That is, our preferences. Finally, mindfulness of mind, which we'll explore more fully and connects to the instruction in some traditions of asking the question, what is this? In fact, you can see that all four of these foundations are simply different avenues of mindful questioning. Korean Sun master Kusan Sunim taught of Zen practice, the Dharma taught by the Buddhas and patriarchs is medicine prescribed according to the kind of disease. What would be the use of medicine if there were no disease to fight? The darkness of the mind is due to your delusive thoughts and emotions alone. When you find yourselves in good or bad circumstances, you neglect your true mind and surrender to the power of conditions. To be swayed by circumstance and to indulge in rash, ill-considered actions causes the mind to be diseased. For the great truth to appear, stop all this now. Throw it away. To awaken your mind, press your face against the wall and ask with all your strength, what is this? In raising this question, it is the doubt that matters, not the words. From the very first of the Zen patriarchs, Bodhidharma, we see this method of direct questioning. He would point to things and ask their meaning by saying, what is that? The fifth patriarch, Hung Jen, offered this question. There is a single little house filled with crap and weeds and dirt. What is it? And again, if you sweep out all the crap and weeds and dirt and clean it all up so there is not a single thing left inside, then what is it? This sort of questioning is the crack where the light gets in. And it is also the genesis of the meditative questioning we know as koans. The word koan is actually the Japanese pronunciation of the Chinese term kung an, literally public cases. Legal cases were meticulously recorded as the early history of China proceeded through the centuries. So there was a natural adaptation of the term applied to the stories of master and disciple interactions leading to the moment of awakening. The conditions leading to such moments are seen as unique to the circumstances of each student's opening. Although there is no formula to be followed, the stories provide examples or pointers on the path ahead for each individual. We study carefully the interaction described to identify the essential turning point of a story, to gain some insight into the transformation. The question, what is it, stands as the deepest inquiry into the human condition and shows the central role of great doubt in awakening from our spiritual slumber. To the extent that we can express reality in Buddhist terms, such as emptiness, Buddha nature, or impermanence, or in words at all, the mystery of life is best expressed as a question. So let's consider here two kinds of questioning. Rational calculation, where we see a problem to be solved stepwise until we achieve an answer. And secondly, meditative questioning or unknowing that can also be thought of as waiting and listening. Rational calculation leads us down a path according to probabilities. We begin with a premise and test forks in the road as we come to them, moving along step by step with each success until the problem is vanquished and our curiosity is satisfied with some certitude. All the advances in our sciences and technologies depend on this method. This calculative thinking is not meditative and does not establish meaning. It treats life as though it were composed of an infinite number of separate parts. It not only operates in the material realm, it affects our vision of other people and even ourselves. It fragments and divides all living creatures into things. Although not inherently harmful, it becomes damaging only when its importance is exaggerated, only when it claims dominion of its view above all others. And when used as a key to making our ethical decisions, it can be at its worst disastrous. Such calculation can solve problems, but it is helpless in penetrating our life mysteries. Unlike a problem, a mystery can never be solved. A mystery can only be penetrated. When we consider meditation from the viewpoint of calculative questioning, we see it as a technique for attaining something else, like a calmer life or better mental and emotional health. And though these outward effects may be some of the fruits of practice, it is a reductive view that actually trivializes meditative activity as having a function, an end, a goal to be possessed. Though some techniques may surely be useful in developing a meditative attitude, they are not to be confused with an actual experiencing of timeless wonder, of existential insight or transformation. Stephen Batchelor writes, "Meditation doesn't add anything to life. It recovers what has been lost. It is a growing awareness of what our existence is saying to and asking of us. It is something fundamental that has been obscured by our infatuation with a separate ego and its endless calculations and melodramas. Meditation and mystery are inseparable. Just as the mysterious cannot be unraveled through calculation, nor can a meditative attitude be acquired as though it were a technical skill. Meditation occurs whenever our innermost awareness is trained upon the shocking nearness, yet elusive distance of what is present. A meditative attitude is a creative attitude. It can be said that just as technical mastery does not create a work of art, neither do meditative techniques bestow insight, wisdom, or compassion on the practitioner. Meditative questioning does not seek to break down a discrete problem into steps. The meditator is both subject and object at once. This meditative questioning, this great doubt, maintains us in a state of astonishment, of not knowing. Philosopher and artist Gabriel Marcel says that a mystery, by definition, transcends every conceivable technique. This not knowing attitude is non-grasping, releasing rather than acquiring something, a willingness to stand in the mystery rather than unravel it. Like the lotus flower, it does not adhere to the muddy waters from which it springs. A state of unknowing in this way is not to be seen as a failure, but as a release. This not knowing is the point at which meditative awareness is born. Again, from Stephen Batchelor, it is fatal in meditation to entertain expectations. As soon as we fix our mind, a picture of what it is we seek to attain, we restrict ourselves to the boundaries of the known. The only notions we will ever be capable of producing will be drawn from the pool of impressions, ideas, symbols, and experiences we have stored in our memory. Even such noble ideas as awakening and Buddha are finally nothing but collages of past impressions stuck together by logic and imagination. Such images can serve as signs to help guide us along the path, but should never be allowed to intrude into our meditative penetration of the mysterious. If they or any other image of a goal attempt to foreshadow the unpredictable and unknown, then meditation will be trapped within thought, memory, and imagination and separated from its mystery. I suspect that by now you may be saying to yourself, this talk has gotten a bit tedious, too Buddhist geeky. Daiko, in fact, provides the perfect counterexample to the point he is trying to make. He uses calculating discourse to talk about something that is indescribable. What a fool. In the spirit of unknowing, I must agree with you. It is ironically humorous that we must use such language in our attempts to communicate mystery. It is said that the Dharma that you can speak of is not the true Dharma. Likewise, and more dramatically, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. So, in apology, I'd like to share with you a bit of a guided meditation from Buddhist nun Sister Ando to ease the cognitive dissonance here. So, let's just settle in for a second, wait and listen, and I'll share this reading with you. I'm sitting, hearing. Am I listening to something specific? No. I'm not even listening, simply hearing. In the waking state, how could I not be hearing? Using this, the sounds appearing in my hearing, I divine for who is hearing. When Sister Ando wrote these words in her journal, she was reading the Sarangama Sutra. It became her daily contemplation to sit with a few words of this sacred text. The sutra was one of only three sacred texts carried by the 14th century Zen master Basui. He wrote the following description of Avalokiteshvara from the sutra. He was a person for whom every sound he heard contemplated the mind of the hearer, realizing his own nature. He was a person who, for every sound he heard, contemplated the mind of the hearer, realizing his own nature. Basui took this approach as inspiration for his own practice of self-inquiry, and through this led many others to discover their own true nature. We can too. If you are truly present here now, then your attention is on these words, drinking them in. Yet you can still perceive sounds, birdsong, a car horn, the wind in the trees. Life is happening all around you, and you can remain with your attention resting in one place while all of life is perceived. You can hear these words and still tell me not only that you can hear a bird singing right now, but that it is a blackbird or a blue jay or whatever. Something recognizes and knows without attention having to go there. So stop for a moment. Just for a moment. Stop and notice. Who is it that is hearing sounds? Look. Look inside. Not through a dynamic action of looking, but simply, quietly, directing your attention within. Hearing a bird sing, we can use the sound to find the source of the hearing. Our attention begins at the bird, or so it appears at first. It begins somewhere else. Where is that? Use the sound as a divining rod to lead you to the source of the hearing, to the one who is listening, the one who hears, the perceiving awareness itself. This is where you will find yourself. If you were to take just this one simple pointing from Zen Master Basui and to follow it in every waking moment, you could discover your own true nature swiftly and directly. No meditation, no yoga, no reading, not even this quiet letter is needed. Just this simple looking. As you go about your evening now, direct your attention to this place that Vasui and Avalokiteshvara are pointing us to look for the one who is hearing. There is nowhere that is unsuitable for this. There is no time of day, no location where you can't apply this. In the waking state, life is a vast ocean of sound. Use it to find your true nature. There is never a time without sound, even if it is simply your own heartbeat, your breath. Sound is always there. I will be with you. It is my own way also. Simply hearing and looking. Forget what you are hearing and look instead for who is hearing. So, in other words, who and what is this? In one section of the Shobogenzo, Dogen Zenji famously examined the Buddha's statement that all beings are Buddha nature. He addresses in a similar way this same crucial point by asking the question, what is it that thus comes? To the extent that this life's mystery can be expressed in words, he finds it best offered as a question. The questioning is the practice. It has performed its duty once great doubt has us in its grip. The Heart Sutra too can be seen as inspiring this great doubt. The verse, form is emptiness, emptiness form, is a koan of its own. A paradox that throws us into the deep end of the pool, away from our habitual mind of calculation. Such koans encourage a courageous investigation of both heart and mind. Chan Master John Crook often spoke to his students of a third place that lies above and between all opposites, above and between the absolute and the relative, form and emptiness, subject and object, presence and absence. This place is the middle point where everything is and also, paradoxically, is not. If we are able to loosen the grip of our calculating minds, our hearts can respond to this mystery in an intimate way. Great doubt opens us to the insights of the teachings and allows us to step into the existential mystery within.